This one has the most famous piece of music ever written, really. Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. Everyone knows it. Everybody loves it. It's pretty much ubiquitous in pop culture, art culture. I mean, any world you live in, you know Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. That's a lot of fun because everybody will know it. It's also a little bit, you know, it's kind of a daunting challenge to take on a piece like that because everybody does know it. And so, you know, you're not going to fool anyone. Not that we ever fool anyone, but you know what I'm saying. It's, you really have to have something to say about a Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. Otherwise, why do it? We've got a million recordings of it out there. So we've got Beethoven's Fifth. We start out the program with Arvo Pärt's Fratres, which is written in 1977. Coincidentally, the year Star Wars came out. Not necessarily related in any way. And then after that, we have our wonderful guest soloist, Alexei, joining us for the Sibelius Violin Concerto, which was written about 100 years after Beethoven's Fifth Symphony and is very moody and glorious at the same time.
As you mentioned, Beethoven's Fifth, it's like the most ubiquitous piece of classical music, and it has a huge history. How did you decide what to put together with this one piece that's just so iconic?
Programming for me is always, it's not scientific. When I'm looking at a program and whether it'll work or not, I'm really going off of what the audience is going to feel like at any given time. So it's less about, you know, this has strands of this philosophical movement in it and that relates to this section of that piece. It's more about what will be a good flow for an audience, what will leave them satisfied at the end of an evening. In a way, there's a connection between the Arvo Pärt Fratres, which is very, it's minimalist. It's this style of music invented by Arvo Pärt called tintinnabulism, which is related to the ringing of bells and simple pitch structures. And so in its simplicity, it is related very closely to Beethoven's Fifth, which is based on a single motive. Bum, 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 right? You've got that motive rhythmically and melodically going through the whole thing. That motive is what ties the whole piece together. So in that way, they're similar. Sibelius also is very much governed by rhythmic motives. So maybe I'll just make this up right now. Maybe it's all about rhythmic motives, but really it's about energy. That's how I approach programming.
As a lot of people, when they're working on something programmatic, or if it's someone approaching an essay or someone composing a work, it's an intuitive, there's intuitive glue about how things connect. And you maybe aren't aware of the connection. And then once you sit down and think about it, you're like, well, maybe that's it, right?
Exactly. No, all of this stuff is, if it's not natural and if it doesn't flow when you're devising it, when you're coming up with it, then it's not really going to work. It's not going to work for the audience. And so I trust my intuition far more than I trust my brain, my cognitive, more recent brain. Let's call it that way.
Let's talk about the guest soloist. I'd love to hear more about playing style, how Sibelius will be approached.
Sure, absolutely. Well, Alexei Kenny, he auditioned for me in New York. He came over to my apartment and he played for me, and I loved his playing. And I've been trying to figure out a way to fit him into our schedule here. His career has exploded since then. He's been doing amazing stuff. From the start, I wanted him to play Sibelius. I thought it would be a wonderful way to showcase his abilities. Something about the Sibelius, it's emotionally very rich, and it takes a very organic style of playing to make it come across, a very heartfelt, pathos-laden skill. And so that's what I heard in Alexei when he played for me originally. Plus, you have to have the incredible technique and virtuosity to pull off the beginning of, say, the last movement, which is, well, it's insane. It borders on the impossible, and you see incredible artists up there. This has got this run of thirds up on the violin. And by the way, if you ever have a chance to ask a violinist to demonstrate playing thirds for you on the violin, you'll kind of laugh because it's if you look at it, it looks impossible what they're doing. Anyway, so this is so fast, such a blinding speed, that amazing world-class players kind of fudge it and start out, they'll start the run a little bit sooner than it should just because there's no way they can fit all the notes in. It's that kind of piece. He definitely has the virtuosity to pull this off. I remember hearing him playing and thinking, okay, there's the guy who can do it.
Now let's go back to Arvo Pärt. He's a composer, and it seems like anytime I play him, I'd hear from a listener, they're like, who is this person?
Right.
In your words, in your mind, what is it about him that draws listeners in with his music?
Well, I don't think it's all of his music. I think there's a certain subset of his music that is very beguiling to us. It pulls us in. And I think it does so by its sheer simplicity. It's extremely economical with its musical means. He comes up with a formula, and I assume this is intuitively derived. It's not something that he says, okay, well, I'm going to take these pitches and I'm going to grind it to death until we're done with the formula. No, it's something that he comes up with that is very organic, and it doesn't necessarily go the traditional trajectory of having a problem and a solution the way so much classically derived music does, even modern classically derived traditional music. His is sort of a universe in and of itself. It behaves by its own rules, and it's exquisitely beautiful. And it's just, I don't know, it's meditative, it's exquisite, and it feels very natural. It just is. And it makes no apologies for being simple, but simple in the most profound way.